Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high atop the milkpacking district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this is Legion of News, a one-hour expedition into information and amusements of various varieties. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is even now at this very moment preparing these stories for your increased knowledge.
Al Gore won't be charged with sexually harassing a Portland masseuse. Australia has their first female prime minister, and an American wins the longest match in Wimbledon history.
Have no doubt, my friends, that by the end of today's broadcast, your life will have improved in ways almost beyond measure, ways that are innumerable, yet all the more real for that. This is Legion of News.
This is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, June 24th, 2010. Al Gore learned yesterday that he won't be facing charges of sexual harassment stemming from a claim by a masseuse that he tried to initiate unwanted sexual contact with her in October of 2006 while staying at Portland's Hotel Lucia under the pseudonym Mr. Stone. Multnomah County District Attorney Michael Schrunk said Wednesday an attorney representing the woman contacted police in late 2006. Schrunk said the woman refused to be interviewed by detectives and didn't want the investigation to continue at that time. In a transcript of the initial interview released by police, the 54-year-old massage therapist said she was doing requested abdominal work on Gore. She claimed he started to moan, demanded to go lower.
Whoa, oh, no.
And
no,
later grabbed her hand and... This is news, Mr. Emerson.
I know. I'm sorry. I wasn't really prepared for this. I didn't think. This part of the story is catching me just the slightest bit off guard. All right. I'm just going to take a moment. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to steel myself here before we plunge on ahead. I realize that as journalists, this is something that we're required to. This is something we have to give to the people because the people need to be informed.
You have to just develop a steely resolve about this sort of thing.
No, that's what I'm going to do. All right. And, okay, I'm sorry. So he's there. He's on the massage table. His name is
Mr. Stone.
Mr. Stone. And the woman is giving him the massage of some kind.
In his abdomen, which I don't think I've ever heard of.
See, I think that's immediately where... Someone's lying to somebody about something there, in my opinion, in my constitutionally protected opinion. I don't think you get an abdominal massage.
Do people go in and say, oh, I've really hurt myself in my belly.
I don't know. It's from my epiglottis all the way down my duodenum. If you could just give it a good rubbing, I think that might help things.
But anyway, she apparently was requested to do this supposed abdominal work. And yes, he got a little handsy. She said that he forced her to drink Grand Marnier, pinned her to the bed, and forcibly French kissed her. She also, in her statement, described him as a man with a violent temper as well as extremely dictatorial, commanding attitude. Besides his Mr. Smiley global warming concern persona, unquote.
I immediately disbelieve everything this woman has said. I'm just saying, I'm not saying she's making it up. Although I believe that to be the case. I'm just saying that everything about this rings absolutely false to me.
She also described him as a giggling, quote, crazed sex poodle, unquote, who gave her a come hither look.
Okay.
Anyway, it's been decided that there's not enough actual evidence.
No.
To
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
To continue with this.
Are you saying that there might be holes in her story, that it might not be entirely plausible?
It's possible that this incident that supposedly happened back in 2006, that she waited a couple of years to actually do anything about, it might not be fully true.
It might not be entirely as she is presenting it.
Yes.
So what is it, in 2006, what would he even have been doing? In other words, where would that have, was the election, when the election had happened, but I mean, was the campaign sort of in full swing in 2006? I guess it would have been.
When was he pimping his documentary?
I don't know. To me, that's the only way I can really remember him now. I don't even, like, when I think about Gore, I don't think of him being the vice president. I don't even really think about the Florida thing all that much. To me,
well, An Inconvenient Truth came out in 2006, so he may have been here in town.
So that makes sense. And he was sort of jetting all over the world, kind of pushing that. To me, he's just the guy on the cherry picker with the, you know, and the PowerPoint thing showing Florida being underwater or whatever. Like, that is, for good or bad.
I've just always been so angry at him for allowing, I don't know if it was his handlers or who it was, that when he was running for president, he was such a stiff, humorless, just bored.
He's a prig.
And the thing is, he actually is very well-spoken, has a terrific sense of humor when you see him.
And a great set of hands, apparently. They're soft like butter.
Yeah, and firm, he's a like giggling rock. Sex poodle.
What does that even mean, that he's a giggling sex poodle?
Well, if you don't know, Mr. Emerson.
I'm sorry.
If you've never experienced.
When the woman said, this is, again, just my opinion, because, of course, as journalists, I'm not disparaging. I am disparaging it. It just sounds made up to me. But when the woman describes Al Gore as being, quote, like a giggling sex poodle, when she says it, you're reading it off the page, but it's in my head as though she's like Dixie Carter or Delta Burke or somebody. You know what I mean? Or like that.
Well, she's a 54-year-old massage therapist, so yes.
I think that tells us what we need to
right,
know.
Right there. Right ballpark.
She's like that Cashmere McLeod woman from Primary Colors. And Governor Stanton and I were lovers for 7 years. Anyway, all right. Well, there you go. Well, I'm going to go request an abdominal massage later on today and just see. Maybe that's code for something, and I didn't even know.
Apparently, the massage therapist did not know the code for that either, because she seemed to be taken aback by what he expected.
My only other comment about the story right now.
My groin hurts. Could you rub me a little bit in the groin area? Call me Mr. Stone. And then he giggled.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we were talking about Al Gore there. That's certainly not going to be taken out of context and played hundreds and hundreds of times over the next day or two. It's certainly not going to be played relentlessly throughout the next hour. My thing about Al Gore is, one, when you said that he was just – what did you say? That he was just such a – he was such a stiff?
Yeah.
In my opinion and in my experience, all of those guys, they prove entirely incapable of making their own decisions until they're no longer running for something, at which point kind of the real person comes out. And it was like Bob Dole. I mean, everybody kind of makes fun of him for doing the Viagra commercials or whatever. But I mean, it's like he never would have done that when he was a politician. But once he became, what did he call himself, Citizen Dole or something? Mm-hmm. Then it's like he was sort of warm and funny, and he was making fun of himself, how he does the third person thing.
And able to express opinions that weren't along the party line.
And actual human emotions that were recognizable as such. So there's that. Also, wait out a second thing. Oh, and if you are annoyed by the fact that during the 2000 election that Al Gore would not allow himself to be presented in any sort of warm or interesting light, which is especially strange when you consider the fact that when he and Clinton were running in 92, Al Gore actually had a lot of charisma on the campaign trail. If you saw any of Al Gore's campaign appearances, he actually really knew how to work the crowd. And he has like way more of an authentic Southern thing going on sometimes than Clinton himself does. But he just seemed to turn off at one point. Don't ever watch the movie Recount with Kevin Spacey, because that'll make you want to kill yourself. It's one of those HBO docudrama things, you know, like they with The Late Shift and Barbarians at the Gate, but it's all about the 2000 election debacle in Florida. And that is one of those stories that no matter how many times we've heard it, it is a testament, I guess, to the power of the acting and the writing and also to the gripping nature of the story itself, that Lara's sitting on the couch and she's watching this recap movie and the thing is, we all know how it ends. Look, it's like, you know, Todd, the Titanic hits a thing and then it sinks and then I'll never let go. But at the same time, you're sitting and I'm crying like a girl in the theater. We all know how the 2000 election ended. At one point, I was wishing for like a steel-enforced remote because I thought she was just going to break the thing in her hand at the moment when Al Gore gets on television. Just, while I strongly disagree with the court's verdict, I am going to go home. Anyway, so there you go. And this is all true. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Australia has its first female prime minister, Julia Gillard, after Kevin Rudd stepped down as Labour Party leader, avoiding a ballot he was certain to lose. In an extraordinary day in Australian politics, Gillard told a media conference in Canberra's Parliament House that she was truly honoured to become prime minister. The 48-year-old, who came under attack in 1998 when she entered Parliament for being single and childless, said it was also an important milestone for Australian women. I think if there's one girl who looks at the TV screen over the next few days and says, gee, I might like to do that in the future, well, that's a good thing.
She came under attack for being childless?
Yeah, she wasn't married and didn't have kids.
Clearly she didn't spend enough time with Al Gore.
And she was in her 40s, so it's like,
her
30s then. So, you know.
You know what they say about...
She probably played softball in high school.
Exactly. Oh,
and
man.
We know what that means.
Can I just tell you, of all of the things, because this very fine radio program and this very fine radio broadcaster have not been on the air up until this last Monday's when we made our debut. So from October 23rd, which is the final day that I was on KUFO, up until the 21st, it seemed like God just rolled out every fantastic story that he had been keeping, he'd been saving, every wonderful celebrity death. There was that sinkhole that opened in, was it Chile or was it Guadalajara? Is Guadalajara a place?
Yes, it is, but it's in Mexico.
Hello, welcome to the News Hour.
You might be thinking of Guatemala.
Is that where the big sinkhole to hell opened?
I believe so, yes.
Anyways, but it was like he waited until I no longer had access to a microphone, and then he just rolled out everything that was fascinating. Up to and including that great photo that was on the front of the Wall Street Journal of what's-her-name, Elliot Kagan, or whatever the chick's name is that is the nominee for the Supreme Court, where she's just got the most butch haircut you've ever seen in your life, and she's playing softball. And I mean... It was like it was put there just to create content for radio programs everywhere, and I was not really able to take advantage of it.
But I mean, honestly, if every woman who played softball in high school is, you know, a secret lesbian, I mean, come on.
It's not that she played softball; it's that she played softball and she looks like Sam Kinison, and also is like 70, and I don't think has ever known the touch of a man, according to those who are in her circle of acquaintances.
But just to actually use that as the definitive proof. Well, look, she played softball. Oh, well then, I guess that proves it then. If she'd play volleyball, then we know she likes dudes.
We know she's easy, the thing. If a chick plays volleyball, she's
is
loose.
Is that it?
No, chicks who play volleyball, you don't even have to have the whole six-pack. You can just have a promise of a mythical six-pack that's like in the back of your friend's Bronco somewhere.
Huh.
I'm just saying that's...
What about the swim team? Do we know anything about women who were on the swim team?
I don't know. Actually, I don't think we didn't have a swim team at our school. We didn't have a pool. So I know I'm making it sound like we was in a tar paper shack or something, which wasn't the case. We didn't have a pool. I've never actually known anybody who went to a high school that had a pool of any kind.
I did.
I'm really honestly not saying anything about Kagan herself as such because I don't really know. I will say two things, and then we'll move on from this. Because I think I'm going to try to give myself a two ancillary comment limit as we go through this hour. I can't expect myself to I can't be restrained like a normal person would because I lack that gene somehow. I'm going to try to limit myself to two side observations. I've already violated that, but there's only going to be two more, and then we'll move on. First one is, I do think in sort of a great way, it would be fantastic if they could just never, you know, because the right has already sort of put the machine in motion to try to dig up whatever it is about her personal life, whether she's the gay or whether she's just, too progressive with her taste or whatever it is. I do think it would be fantastic if it turns out that she's just a woman without a past. They just open up the dossier and it's just blank and empty. But then if they somehow put her on the bench and she was just like a full-on screaming communist. I mean, I don't mean like in a figurative sense, like if she was an actual literal communist and she waited until the very last moment to go, ha ha, charade. Which, I mean,
that would at least be entertaining.
That's what, and that's the only thing I care about. Politics, I know I no longer cling to the illusion that they make any difference in the world or that they alter anything or that they make anybody's lives better. They are the sheer entertainment value for me. So there's that. And also, I just love the fact that the Wall Street Journal put the photograph of her playing softball on the front. Right as the stories about her personal life and her orientation, whatever coming out, it's one of the best things I've seen a newspaper do in about a year, because it's that sort of thing that everybody knows, but that you're not really allowed to discuss in polite company without making yourself look intolerant. So it was just like the best jujitsu move on the part of the Wall Street Journal, because it baited a response that they knew could not actually be given, because anyone who would respond would by definition look more foolish. I mean, it was just like the most genius move. So it was almost like this weird Zen mastery of journalism as an art form. All right, here's Don Taylor.
John Isner won the longest tennis match on record Thursday by beating Nicholas Mahieu, 70-68 in the final set of their epic first-round encounter at Wimbledon. Picking up at 59-59 in the fifth set, the match continued on serve with no break points until the American hit a backhand passing shot past the Frenchman in the 138th game of the set to finish the contest in front of a packed crowd at Court 18. The first-round match lasted 11 hours, 5 minutes, over 3 days. The fifth set alone lasted 8 hours and 11 minutes.
This is a tennis game?
Yes, at Wimbledon.
Isn't there a timer or something that buzzes? Don't they at a certain point, they go, and that's it, and you're
well,
done.
Eventually, you know, people want to go home. That's why it was over 3 days. I mean, I suppose if you want, they should have just made them play straight through.
No, but I mean, when you say this is Wimbledon, I don't know anything about tennis. The idea the Royals had that they would make it confusing enough that the lay people would not be able to follow it was, in fact, that was correct, because I know dick about tennis. So this is multiple matches, or this is one?
This is a game. You have sets, basically, within the game. It's like...
Are they like periods in basketball, or halves and whatever that is?
No,
football?
Because they're not timed. They're more like baseball. You play to certain points, I believe, and then that's the end of a set. If someone gets X number of points over your number of points, that's the end of a set.
But there's
and then
no
you win a certain number of sets within a game.
There's no cutoff, though. There's no time limit.
Obviously,
well, clearly
not.
They went for 3 days. They should just make them. I mean, what kind of sissies are they? They should have just made them play until one of them passed out.
Well, in some matches there are tiebreakers, but they don't do tiebreakers in Wimbledon.
I'm not talking about a tiebreaker. I'm saying no one gets to leave. You continue to hit the balls back and forth, until one of you is no longer able to lift your arms, and then the other guy wins.
Never before in the history of Wimbledon, which first was contested in 1877, has any match, singles or doubles, men or women, lasted more than 112 games, which was a mark set in 1969.
Is it possible that is a game that is played on grass?
Yes.
How is that? Maybe this is a different kind of grass than I am used to. Are we talking about the lumpy green stuff that grows on the ground?
No, they have special grass. Wimbledon grass.
All right. But what does I mean?
It's probably very firmly packed.
It still grows in dirt, though, right?
And I believe there are actual specifications for exactly how high it's cut. And I mean, because Wimbledon's a very big deal.
But so. I mean, the best part there is how you were speaking to me as though I were a small child.
Here we go. You have to win 6 games, and if you win 6 games, it makes a set, and you have to win by 2 games. So if you're ahead and somebody keeps catching up with you, it just keeps going and going and going until you win by 2.
Hold on. Maybe I haven't had enough caffeine or something this morning, because you have to win. I can't even believe that I care about this, and the thing is I really don't, but now it's like a quest. I have to understand it. There's 6 games in a set.
Sets have multiple games, and matches have multiple sets.
Okay, you know, that thing where I was going to... I'm folding this back up. That thing where I was going to try to figure it out, F that.
The important thing to know is that you have to win by 2, and if they keep catching up with you, then you have to keep winning more, because you have to win by 2. So if you're ahead 1, and then the other guy wins 1, then it's like, we have to do this again.
So it's like like in auto racing or something, it would be like if you had to win by 2 laps.
And Thomas Gill says it's actually on clay with golf course green height grass on top of the clay.
Never mind. I'm going to stop myself right there, because otherwise we're going to get back into a tennis discussion. And I mean, no one wants that. And by no one, I mean me. So we're just going to move on as though that's not actually the case. All right. But I do think that from now on, just to make it more interesting, they should just, I mean, if you get in and one guy can't seem to pull ahead by more than 2 whatevers, then you know what? You just keep going, friend. And you don't get to sleep. You don't get to leave. You don't get to go whiz anywhere. You have to keep playing. That's how they ought to do every sport. That's how they ought to do the Super Bowl. They ought to time it somehow so that the playoffs end. You know, there's like the whatever. There's the I know I'm less than a man and whatever, but there's the National League and whatever, the American League or whatever the hell. Don't bother to correct me. But you end up with 2 teams in all sports. I think they ought to time it so you end up with the 2 teams on about the same day, and then they got to get on a plane like then, that instant, and they fly to some third-party location that is equidistant away from both of their home cities, so neither of them really has the time zone advantage. That both teams get on a plane, you fly there, you get off the plane, they bus you to the field, you get out, you get on the field, you start right then. There's no rest. No fluids of any kind will be given.
I think if we're going to... My feeling on sports is if we're going to have this kind of brand loyalty to our cities, they shouldn't be millionaires who, like, live here temporarily just to play for us. That in something like the Super Bowl or the World Series, it should be played by people who actually live here in the city.
It should be played by Matt Groening.
It should be like jury duty. You should just get something in the mail that tells you you're going to play in the Super Bowl and you like have to go.
That's the best idea I've ever heard. All right, that is that idea was created right here. That is the intellectual property of Legion of News and the Emerson News Network. That idea was created here at 12:21 on Thursday, June 24th, 2010. It may not take this this form exactly. There may be some derivations or alterations to the aforementioned idea, but said idea shall remain the intellectual property of Emerson News Network, and any and all fiscal and fiduciary benefits of said product shall also accrue to Emerson News Network and shall be apportioned at network's discretion exclusively. That's awesome. What if you just got and I had everybody sort of, I'm not going to say they stole my idea, but I had this, you know, years ago, I was just, we got to do like a big kickball league. And that sort of happened. And, you know, everything that you played when you were in second grade has now been brought back for adults because we're all children. But there ought to be something like that where they just say, like, look, Portland is going to play a game of insert whatever the sport is here for honor. You have been chosen.
Yeah,
Do you heed the call?
And you don't get to send in ringers. You don't get to go get, like, guys who are playing on your professional basketball team. It's completely random. And like with jury duty, if you have a good reason, like you say, well, I'm in a wheelchair, I can't play football. Or you say, you know, I have something important that day, my boss won't let me off work or whatever. Like jury duty, you can get out of
it. But you go back in the pool.
But yeah, you go back in the pool. And then they go to the next randomly chosen person.
That is a fantastic idea. And see, and that would actually shut up a lot of the people who just will carp, probably with some justification, about how, you know, like they talk about how the Yankees, you know, for years, just buy the pennant because they have so much money that they're able to. And I know that they try to balance it out with the draft pick rounds and whatever. You can hear how I'm just like at the very, like, I'm just scraping like the barrel. I'm digging underneath the barrel of my sports knowledge now to try to figure this out.
And then when you have all these people that are just going, well, we really brought it. We really played a great game last night. They would actually be telling the truth. Yes, we actually did play a good game. Because that drives me crazy when people are like, you know, looking at a Seahawks game and they're going, yeah, we really trounced them. And I'm like, well, first of all, you weren't playing personally. And second of all, that's not even our town. What do you mean we?
We really brought it. You sat on your Snackwell's ass, friend. You didn't bring anything. You didn't bring anything but shame to your family with your ever-expanding girth and Cheeto-stained fingers. But the upshot is, though, that we would still never win anything here. Utah and Portland and Seattle would continue to lose. Oakland would continue to win everything.
Which actually brings me to another story. That's an excellent segue for a story in which, according to a... I don't know how they came up with this. This is one of those... The Mars Chocolate Company has released their Combos trademark America's Manliest Cities study, ranking 50 major metropolitan areas. And Portland came dead last.
Out of how many? 50?
50.
Who was ahead? Well, I don't want to hear all 49, but let me guess if I can guess who was number one.
Let me tell you what the
what are the criteria?
The criteria were... they were chosen based on the number. A lot of criteria included the number of home improvement stores, steakhouses, pickup trucks, and motorcycles per capita.
Well, that seems unfair because you're tilting everything by definition in favor of more rural and underdeveloped. You're tilting it in favor of rubes.
They were chosen for the cities were chosen due to their manly lifestyle, manly retail stores, manly occupations, and salty snack sales categories. Because this is the Mars combo snack food thing. So, yes, we came 50.
50. The thing is, I shouldn't be offended by it, but I am. That's the sort of thing that makes this story ridiculous, is that I shouldn't care, and yet there is like a tiny, small, apparently effeminate part of my personality that's all angry and wants to give them a stern talking to, followed by a very strongly worded letter, and perhaps a good scolding. Number one. Well, number one seems like it has to be like Dallas or something.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
I don't even know what's in Charlotte, North Carolina. When I think of North... Let me ask you this. When you picture certain states, Don Taylor, now I know as a journalist you try to be objective about these things, but when you picture certain states, do you just picture like one of those big like cartoony maps that they give you at like OMSI or something where it shows Washington State and like a huge space needle on top of the state, and then they'll show Florida and there's like mouse ears or something? That's when I picture North Carolina, I just picture like fields of tobacco and then like a guy strumming a banjo.
I only know that North Carolina is above South Carolina, and I've been to South Carolina, and that's where I officially started puberty.
Okay.
I'll tell you that story someday.
Please, please don't.
No, it's not a gross...
No, how could it be?
Sorry. It's more of a sexy story. So, anyway, Columbus, Ohio is...
I'm experiencing fear right now.
Columbus, Ohio is the second manliest city in the country.
Columbus, Ohio?
Followed by Kansas City, Missouri, Nashville, Tennessee, and Baltimore, Maryland.
Well, okay. I mean, I guess I could get the Nashville thing. I guess I could get the Baltimore. Look, I mean, any city where it's like one in two people will be killed by the end of today probably has some degree of testosterone going on, so...
This is one of those lists that only exists so that it goes out on the news wires and then idiots like us talk about it and say Mars Chocolate North America Combos trademark.
All right.
That's the only thing. No one cares.
Now,
it doesn't mean anything.
No, but you know what is interesting is, and I won't go on and on about this, although I could if I had to, is the Mars company itself. The Mars Chocolate Company is fascinating, and I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. They are absolute and total. I'll give you this one small example. Up until, I think, 94, maybe 93, the only publicly available photo, because it's a family empire. It's like John Mars to Phil Mars to Ted Mars to, you know, whatever, and they pass it on down the line. I still think it's not a publicly traded company. I think it's still privately held. Up until, I think, 1994, the only publicly available photograph of the president of Mars was his high school yearbook photo. Because he didn't like his photo taken, and the company would not release a picture of him. They would not tell you what the president of the... And if you asked for one, they would tell you no. If you mailed them or called repeatedly asking for any information about the guy who ran the company, you would, in fact, receive a cease and desist letter from Mars Incorporated's lawyers telling you to knock it off.
Hmm.
So there you go. It's covered. There's a book called Crisis in Candyland that discusses the M&M Mars Company in great detail.
Interesting.
So there you go. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
An 89-year-old woman in Longview, Washington, was pepper sprayed by a man and had her purse ripped from her hands Wednesday during a trip to the grocery store. Longview police arrested 22-year-old Tori Peterson and 23-year-old Dylan Kelly on robbery charges in connection with the crime. At about noon, police said, Peterson walked up to the elderly woman in the parking lot near the Fred Meyer store on Ocean Beach Highway and used pepper spray on her. Detectives said Peterson pulled the purse hard enough that the strap came off and the victim was knocked to the ground. After Peterson took the purse, he jumped in a getaway car driven by Kelly. Detectives said the pair hid in Longview home and a three-hour standoff ensued. Peterson's longtime neighbors saw the SWAT team surround the home. We watched him grow up. We know all those guys, said neighbor David Brusewitz. It was really a sad thing to watch. The standoff ended peacefully with both men being hauled away in handcuffs.
There are no four words that are sadder to me than the standoff ended peacefully. I hate it when the standoff ends peacefully. I like it when the standoff ends with the cops rushing the house, sustaining no injuries themselves, but reducing all the troublemakers just to a fine paste of some kind. Also, pepper spray. This is my one second ancillary observation. So after this, I would be, if you had the shock collar, the shocking would happen after this one. Am I the only one that thinks that pepper spray is designed badly in that it's a perfectly round, I mean, it's a cylindrical container, which means that it seems like the odds are pretty good, like maybe one in four, that you're gonna sprit yourself in the face if you try to, like you got a cabbie or something who's trying to grope your bosoms and you try to, and you're just going to end up blinding yourself with that.
Yeah, I'm actually afraid of pepper spray because I can't handle a sandwich without spilling it on myself. I don't think I should be allowed to have pepper spray.
You're one of the reasons why guns should not just be handed out like so many pretzels in this country. Here you go. What's the worst that could go wrong? I don't have pepper spray. I don't have mace. I don't have a gun and everything like that. Because I would probably use it on. I'd use it all the time. I'd be spraying and tasing and shooting people. You know, Sarah has a. Not a taser as such. She has a stun gun, which I guess is the difference. Is the taser can hit you from across the room. The stun gun, she's
you have to actually poke the person with
it. It's like a stubby cattle prod, basically. Yeah, you have to. A listener gave it to her, and I forget how he did that in a way that didn't seem sort of creepy. Where he said, "Hey, I've got something for you," and like reached into his bag and pulled out a stun gun. But I don't have one of those because I would use it constantly, but then I would. In a sort of cyclical nature taking care of itself sort of fashion, I would inevitably then just kill myself with it accidentally.
I would use it to stun things that are like inappropriate, Like, I would, like, just put it on inanimate objects to see what would happen. Like, what if I stunned the watermelon? Will it explode? And then I'd probably break it. Or, conversely, I would have it in my bag, and I'd reach for it, and I'd hit the button wrong, and I'd just shock myself.
Oh, it's fishing around in there looking for your keys or your Tic Tacs. Wait, hold on. Is that...
Pretty much, yes.
Not the Tic Tacs. You know, Sarah has a stun gun, and there's a store down the street that sells watermelon. Now, we are a radio program, so I think we know what has to be done with those two pieces of information and, in fact, those two objects. What if we got... Okay, but what if it wasn't just a stun gun? What if we got an actual taser? What would happen if you tased a watermelon?
It might explode.
Because it's like 80% water.
Yeah, and it's electricity, yes.
See, but you're saying it might explode, but you don't really know that. That's just...
Well, the thing is that it's the liquid is encased inside the watermelon.
I know what a watermelon is.
But I'm saying that the electricity...
I don't think it's an otter pop. No, but I'm saying... Here's what I'm saying.
I think it would burst.
Okay, we have to put a pin in this right now and stop. And we have to wait. Don't call. Don't email. Don't whatever. We'll talk about this next hour because we're gonna get sidetracked. Okay. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor. You are listening to Legion of News. We air every weekday from noon until 1 p.m. right here on PDX.FM. By the way, I should note, speaking of science and the world of the future today, that if you are wanting to listen to this program on a mobile device or anything on PDX.FM on a mobile device, which is a smartphone, BlackBerry, iPhone, iPad, what have ye, you can do that by going to mobile.pdx.fm, mobile, mobile.pdx.fm, mobile. PDX.FM, and don't forget that this show, if you catch part of it, all of it, none of it, whatever, you want to pass along to somebody else, it is archived each and every weekday right here at PDX.FM. You can also find out more at legionofnews.com. Coming at 1 o'clock over at rickemerson.com, the Rick Emerson Show will be on. Rick Emerson Show today at 1 o'clock featuring, I know that it's like 4 days late, but we're going to do our True Blood recap from Sunday because I just got to watch it last night. Religious Nutcase Watch, Jackson Watch. Today's Pop Culture Authority asks the question, how is Captain Crunch cereal responsible for the Apple computer? In some small contributory fashion, at least. And we're going to talk about tasering a watermelon.
And that is actually Cap'n Crunch, not See, Captain Crunch.
My wife does that, too, and I know that that is how it is written. But that is an unpleasant colloquialism that I cannot bring. That is a studied informality that I cannot bring myself to utter.
All right.
It's like Lil Rascals or whatever. I can't do that. I can't call things Cap'n or Lil. It's just not in my mouth. Rebels at just the act of trying to form the word. All right, tasing a watermelon coming up today on the Rick Emerson Show.
Terrific.
You don't really think it's terrific?
No, I do. All right. I'm excited.
Here's Don Taylor.
Well, we've passed the first day of summer officially, which means that fireworks went on sale on Wednesday. We're a week and a half from 4th of July, which means now that the Portland firefighters are going to tell you how dangerous fireworks are and how you shouldn't actually play with them. Last year on the 4th of July holiday, firefighters responded to 45 fires caused by fireworks. This year, their goal is to dramatically reduce that number. They are also reminding everyone that things like bottle rockets, mortars, or firecrackers, which are legal in Washington, are not allowed in Oregon.
Wait a minute. What were the three things? Bottle rockets, mortars, and...
firecrackers.
So I think the difference between a firework and a firecracker is the one has a live fire on it and one does not. So one of those things that just whistle, the Piccolo Pete things they were called.
Yeah.
And it's just like a and then you sit and then you think to yourself, I paid $4 for that.
Yeah. All we're allowed to have here are like sparklers and snakes.
Snakes.
The really crappy ones.
Yeah.
When you were a kid, you really like went, this will be fun. This isn't fun at
all. You know what's fun about snakes, though? Here's the thing. The great thing about the snake firework is that it permanently blackens anything it touches, which means that come December, you can go out and have a little bit of it's like carving your name in the cement or whatever. When the guy comes by and he lays the asphalt on the sidewalk and he put you like Rick or whatever, the snake is there. So like you, when it's cold, there are no leaves on the tree. It's just a bleak winter, barren wasteland outside. You can look and go, those were good times this past July. And it's there as a permanent marker of your 4th of July the fire making experiment. But there's no actual fun to be had then. It's all delayed reaction. The other thing I think you can still get is smoke bombs, which are those are great. I'm a big fan of those. Although, when I was a kid, I was always frustrated that you would have this round smoke bomb, which is great because it looked like a miniature version of one of those things that like Snidely Whiplash would have.
Yeah.
But then when the smoke bomb was done, it was like only the top 5% was ever gone. The rest of it, and you're sitting there going, well, what is the rest of this? Why doesn't it light? So I don't know if it's some sort of inert material that they use for the bottom of the, to give it heft, because otherwise the thing would be minuscule. There's that, and then there's, you know, as you said, the sparklers. I don't know whether I'm whether I'm actually becoming old or not, but as the years go by, it does start to make a little more sense to me. I get less angry about the fact that fireworks are largely illegal at this point. And not to be the whole when I was a kid, but in years past, you were able to basically go buy. I mean, I think they would have sold you like a howitzer if you'd had the money. You just go up to a guy and he's in one of those, and he's in the most dangerous thing you can imagine, which is a small, tiny, congested wooden shack filled with gunpowder.
Yes.
And by the way, on cement, also in the hottest month of the year. I don't know how it is that some guy didn't have the bright idea, oh, now wait a minute, I'm going to buy one firework for a nickel, but if I just toss it back inside, I get a whole show. You shouldn't do that, by the way.
No.
The idea that we would just take idiot Americans and just give them a thing that shoots fire into the sky, and fire that will then land like blocks and blocks away, that does seem ill-advised. And so as I have grown older, I understand the man's point of view on that.
Yeah, I now live in a very nice, quiet apartment complex. So last 4th of July was quite serene, and that was nice. But for 10 years previous to that, I was living in a house. And I lived on a street full of college kids. I lived near the University of Portland. And I lived like... The next three houses down for me were off-campus housing.
Yeah.
So I never would go out on 4th of July because I was convinced that if I left, they would set my backyard on fire. Something horrible would happen if I left my home. So.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I think you're allowed to have at this point is those pop-it things. In fact, I think they were selling those at Safeway last night. You can just get yourself a big box of those. So, I mean, kids' fireworks are like drugs. If they're actually fun or work, they've been made illegal. You can't have them. The government keeps them all for themselves. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, just to reiterate with the fireworks, if you are caught with illegal fireworks and it's your first offense, you could face a $100 fine. If you're a repeat offender, you could face a fine up to $2,500 and 5 years in jail. So be smart with the illegal fireworks.
By way of giving people information and helping to create a more literate and educated populace, I wonder if it's illegal, because the thing with Cuban cigars, like you can't buy them or bring them in, but if they just magically appear in your house somehow, they're legal to have. It's like a weird loophole with that. So I wonder what the thing is with fireworks in Indian reservations. So it's like you can't be standing in your front yard probably firing off a Roman candle, I don't think. Or can you if you didn't? In other words, if it just appeared, like what if you went in your basement and found a bunch of illegal fireworks from before they were illegal? So if you didn't buy them this year...
I don't think it really matters when they were manufactured. I think there's like a grandfather clause with illegal fireworks.
So it's not like all the Sudafed.
In fact, if anything, they're probably more dangerous because they've been sitting around in a basement for years.
Well, that's a fair point. I wonder if the actual act of purchasing illegal fireworks on a reservation, if that's a crime, if you're a citizen of a state where they are illegal.
I don't know. I will say I don't think it is, because I know that... the police do, I don't know, because I know that the police do sometimes patrol the fireworks stands in Washington and watch people's license plates.
Right.
So I don't know if they wait to bust you until you cross back over the state lines.
Well, you mean Oregon cops go over there and they do that?
Yeah. Yeah, state, I wouldn't think state that police, they, I would think.
I wouldn't think that they'd be allowed to do that. But if they're state...
They may wait and... I don't know. I have heard tell of this happen.
You can tell right now that not only do I know anything about sports, I know little about anything, actually. So I'm officially now on the thin ice of making things up.
One of our listeners says in the chat box, he says that you can buy the Indian fireworks, but you're not allowed to have them in your possession. So
you could buy them. Well, that makes no sense. Once you buy them, they're yours. You possess them.
Well, I think they can't make it illegal for you to purchase something, but, you know.
You can't bring them back here and have them.
Right.
So if I were in Washington.
You could buy them in Washington and use them in Washington.
Or give them to somebody else or whatever. But the instant I possess them, the instant I both possess them and am in Oregon.
Right.
Or wherever they're illegal, bam, that's the magic confluence that makes it illegal.
Yes.
All right. There. I don't know how it is we didn't kill ourselves when we were kids by then. I don't mean like we in general as a collective. I mean we literally, like me and my friend Virgil, because he had a friend who had this, it was like a Monte Carlo, and the trunk was all messed up somehow, like he'd spilled motor oil or cheerleader's blood or something. And so the carpet was all gone. And so the inside of the trunk was just metal. And we would go to the Indian reservation and buy like 17 grocery bags, like the paper kind, full of fireworks, and then stick them in the metal trunk of an air-conditioned Monte Carlo for like, yeah, you know, the 110-degree drive back. We should have been dead 100 times over.
Yeah, I was at a party once, and someone came. Their costume was they were completely covered in foil, and that was when there had been much drinking going on, and some of the guys decided it would be a really good idea to have him stand on one side of the swimming pool and them to stand on our side of the swimming pool and shoot Roman candles at him that they'd purchased in Mexico until they, like, went over the fence into the neighbor's yard and started a fire, and everyone went, ah! There was screaming, and they ran and hopped the fence and was trying to put out the fire. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was not good.
Don Taylor is not a role model, kids.
No.
Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
In further summer news, a national crackdown on drunken boating is set for the weekend in an effort to reduce injuries and fatalities in the water.
That's an effort that will not be successful in any way, by the way.
Operation Dry Water 2010 will be the second annual crackdown on boating under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Marine law enforcement officers will be out in full force Friday through Sunday to check on boaters around Oregon and other states. The National Association of State Boating Law Administrators says that alcohol or drugs contribute to nearly 1 in 5 recreational boating fatalities.
Let me tell you, that is a group of sex-crazed maniacs, that organization.
They're wacky.
National Organization of State Boating Law Administrators is a... you don't want to be in the same room as those guys.
Media coverage helped police identify an inmate in the Washington County Jail who couldn't remember his own name. Photos of the mystery man circulated in the media and among police of the inmate Wednesday night, and then on Thursday morning, authorities announced they'd been able to identify Gerald Rosen as the man arrested on suspicion of trespassing. Rosen was arrested after police received several 911 calls about him walking through strangers' yards in the Aloha area. When he was booked into the jail, he couldn't give deputies his name, and they believe he may have been suffering from some sort of dementia. Because of an apparent lack of a criminal history, the man's identity was a mystery until a deputy saw photos circulating and remembered him as someone she had dealt with in the past.
So he did have a criminal history. She just... findable for...
I don't think he'd ever been booked for anything. He wasn't in the records. But I think perhaps she's, you know, probably bumped into him on the street and seen him muttering to himself or something.
This is a guy that looks... You could squeegee the grease off of this guy. He doesn't look like a guy you want wandering through your yard or any place.
No, and the eyes just aren't all there.
Yeah, no, that's just a lot of burned out flashbulb going on in those eyes. All right. This is Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show begins at 1 o'clock today, featuring a Jackson Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, and our 4 days late True Blood update.
I believe it's time that we segued into entertainment news.
Fantastic. Here is your entertainment news for whatever. What is today? Today is Thursday right here on the Legion of News program.
After 20 years of estrangement, LaToya Jackson has reunited with her late brother's pet chimp for an emotional Animal Planet documentary, Michael Jackson and Bubbles, The Untold Story. Jackson, 54, is seen visiting the Center for Great Apes in Florida, which 27-year-old Bubbles...
The Center for the Grape Ape?
Great Apes.
Great Ape. All right.
Great Apes.
Okay.
In Florida, which 27-year-old Bubbles, who toured with Michael and appeared in his music videos, has called home since 2004. Though Michael had been to the sanctuary several times before his death last year, this was the first visit by any other Jackson family member, reports the Highlands Today newspaper. "Oh, I want to kiss you, I want to hug you, but I know I can't because you're so big," Jackson tells Bubbles before breaking down into sobs. "You remember me, don't you? I miss you, Bubbles."
You know, there was a time when I didn't think we were going to have any more Jackson news, and I thought that was a well that had just run dry, that we had leached every tiny bit of news moisture out of that. But it continues to give. They continue to entertain.
Later in the documentary, which airs tonight, she said, "He looks the same to me. The eyes. Everything's the same. You see just a more mature person."
Or a chimp.
Jackson's visit brought back memories of her brother. "She's still mourning her brother's death," said Sanctuary Director Patty Reagan, and Bubbles reminded her of Michael.
Patty Reagan?
Her name was Patty Reagan. Reagan.
Wait, is this Patty as in the?
No,
as
in R-A-G-A-N.
Patty. All right, because that was just going to be too, weird. No. Especially because I think Patty Reagan and LaToya Jackson both posed for Playboy at around the same time. So that would have been too odd. And does the chimp, did it say that the chimp actually calls it home? Is that
yes,
because they didn't get the quote directly from the chimp? The thing that chimp actually, I think when you're kept somewhere forcibly, that's you call that a prison.
Yeah.
So they're probably not going to get his on the statement on the record statement.
When you force a chimp to live somewhere, though, it's a sanctuary.
Yes, of course. No, animals love being in small confined spaces. There's nothing they love more than being tethered up and enclosed in a tiny hovel.
Especially after having the run of Neverland.
Exactly. Oh, that I never really thought about that. That's got to suck too if you're if you're Bubbles and you've just they must have some consciousness of, animals have some consciousness of treatment or of relative behaviors that affect them. So the idea that he really is just being lavished with treatment and just being pampered 24 hours a day, and then, hey, we're gonna stick in a cage in this place. Have fun. Enjoy the rest of your life. Because they live, I think, to be like 60 or 70 years of age or something.
He's just sitting around thinking, wow, the food here sucks.
Seriously. When's the weird guy coming back? This blows. I want to go home. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Sammy Hagar has signed with It Books, an imprint of HarperCollins, to write a memoir. It's due to be released in 2011. Hagar said Wednesday that he's been writing this book my whole life and that it's time to put it between two covers. The 62-year-old Hagar has been a solo artist and even a tequila producer, but is best known as the former frontman for Van Halen. Is that true? Is he best known as the former frontman for Van Halen?
I think that depends on who you ask and whether or not you want a fist fight. In my estimation, well, if you were to go up to the average person on the street and say, "Hey, you know Sammy Hagar?" And they say, "Yeah," and you go, "What did he do?" I think that 62 to 75% of people actually would probably say that he is best known as as the guy who took over for Roth. I think if you were to survey the KGON audience, I think probably like 98.999% of those guys would go, no, I did that song Three Lock Box. It was awesome. Or they would have some knowledge of it. I will say this. I actually really like, I like Sammy Hagar's solo work. I really like Van Halen, but that is too great taste. That is like a mayonnaise soda. That is two things that do not go well together. I think I was talking to you about something the other day, and I used the example of the Bose noise-canceling headphones, where they talk about, and the Bose noise-canceling headphones create a wave that is the inverse of the sound wave that you are trying to eliminate, thus reducing all of the incoming noise. That is exactly what Sammy Hagar and Van Halen did. It was like you had these two great things, and then two great things. Oh, they're both gone. Oh, and their place is this thing that blows. In this place... In place of Van Halen is this entity that just makes songs that sound like beer commercials. Oh, this sucks. I don't know. He also is known to rock aficionados as the guy who owns Cabo Wabo, which is a famous rock club in Cabo. And he does, in fact, have... God damn, why do I know all of this? I am 37 years of age. There may only be one way to rock, but I have passed the point where I can do it. It is no longer accessible to me. I am old. And I'm talking about these are fairly recent developments that I think he started, like he rolled out his own tequila brand. Isn't it called Mas Tequila? I asked Don Taylor.
Something like that, I think.
He clearly doesn't know.
I don't know. I did know that he was doing his own tequila brand.
I think it's called Mas Tequila because he actually has a song called Mas Tequila, which is sort of great and stupid in the way that all Sammy Hagar compositions are. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, something, something rhymes with 4, blah, blah, blah. Give me Mas Tequila. Hey-ya! And then there's like a guzzling sound or something. All right, let's forget I just
actually
talked about Sammy
it's
Hagar this
Cabo Wabo tequila.
Are you sure about that?
I'm looking at it on the Google right now.
All right. Well, that is both shaming and comforting that I actually don't have as much Sammy Hagar knowledge at my mental fingertips as I thought I did. All right, here you go.
Mariah Carey is in the doghouse with a New York City veterinarian who says she hasn't paid nearly $30,000 in bills for 3 of her dogs. Veterinarian Cindy Bressler sued Carey on Wednesday in a Manhattan state court. The lawsuit says Bressler provided extraordinary services last fall for the Jack Russell Terriers named Cha-Cha, Dolomite, and JJ.
Dolomite?
Dolomite.
Okay.
But Bressler says the Grammy Award-winning singer paid only about $8,000 of the nearly $38,000 in charges. Carey's spokeswoman didn't immediately respond to telephone and email messages. Bressler's lawyer declined to elaborate on the dog's treatment. Yeah. What exactly did you do to dogs that cost $38,000?
Now, this isn't like a boarding place. This is a veterinary. This is a vet?
She's a vet.
Okay, it's a vet. Well, but see, I'm surprised that it's only $30,000 because that's $10,000 a dog. And I have to tell you this. We were talking about my dog Philo yesterday. Now, Philo has actually cost me almost nothing. Basically, he's cost the adoption fee, and then, you know, whatever it takes to feed him, which isn't a lot because he's afraid of the food and the food bowl. And so I'll pour the food into a, you know, which you can tell from the photograph that I put up yesterday. He's afraid of everything. Air, being awake, being asleep, leaves, the sun, gravity, carpet, doesn't matter. So I'll pour the food in the bowl, and he'll kind of come up and, like, stare at it for a while, and then he'll, like, lean forward, and he'll, like, he does, if he had the extendable H.R. Giger teeth from Alien to pick up a piece of food, he would, but he'll reach in, and he'll, like, with his teeth, he'll kind of pick up a single piece of food, and then snatch his head back and run away and eat it in the corner, and then he'll come up and get another, and so it takes him 3 hours to eat a bowl of food.
Have you tried feeding him on a plate so that he doesn't have to put his face inside something?
I thought about telling him not to be such a whining little girl of a dog, but that doesn't really work. No, there's nothing that's going to work. He's just, but anyway, he cost me nothing. In the first year that we had Max, who was the other dog, I don't even know if I want to say the figure because it makes me sound like Leona Helmsley. In the first year that I had Max, I think he cost me, I mean, it's over, I would say it was approaching $2,000 in vet bills, because we hadn't had him in the house a month. And he ate a bunch of Baker's chocolate that I didn't even know we had.
Oh.
I didn't even know it existed. And Laura was at work, and he somehow nosed open a cupboard. It's like, what are these little waxy wrappers? This is interesting. And then he just, like, and then, you know, he belched and fell over. And I went, oh, that's bad. And then he followed that up by eating, like, 2 pounds of grapes, you know, and then some thumbtacks. And so, you know, but I told him the last time, I said, as though I were speaking to Bubbles the chimp, I said, this is it. You are not getting another reprieve. So if you decide to go home and eat a bunch of D-cell batteries, that's on you. And you're just going to have to work that out yourself. So, all right. Anyway. So, but if Mariah Carey, though, if she's a dog person, don't you figure celebrities, everything a celebrity gets costs more than the equivalent would be for you or I, right? Like, you go buy a pair of shoes, you know, even if they're expensive, they're whatever. But if Mariah Carey goes to buy a pair of shoes, you got to figure that they're 10 times that. I would imagine her vet bills would have been $110,000.
Wow. They're
not like us, you know.
I'm just assuming that there must have been some boarding fees involved there or something, because that's a lot of nail clippings and anal squeezins and things that they do to dogs at the vet.
It sounds like the worst treat you could possibly buy. And it's sort of squishy, and it comes in a sealed bag with a picture of like a dog with a waggly tail and a glint in its eye in the front. Anal squeezins. Now fortified.
Well, on television tonight, the big news is Futurama returns.
Yes, it is.
With 26 all-new episodes.
Fantastic.
And we will be talking about that later.
And that's on Fox, right?
That is on Fox.
Because I can never, I didn't think it was a thing where Comedy Central had forked up the money themselves. It was, this is sort of the Family Guy dynamic, where it was canceled. And then the direct-to-DVD sales were brisk enough.
Actually, this is going to be Comedy Central.
Okay, so it is on Comedy Central.
It's on Comedy Central.
So this is because the reruns got a high enough rating, and the direct, because they did, I think, 4 direct-to-DVD movies. Mm-hmm. They did Bender's Game, Beast with a Thousand, or Beast with a Billion Backs.
Wild Green Yonder was the last one.
Maybe there was only 3. I don't know if there was a 4th one or not. But,
no,
but
there were 4.
But they were all really, really good to one degree or another. They kind of diminished in quality as they went on, but they were all worth watching, and they were all worth the price of purchase. And so that is where somebody sat up and took notice, and they said, well, hey then. Which is impressive, because animation is not cheap to do, and it's not easy to do. I mean, it's time-consuming. It's unbelievably expensive.
Yeah, David X. Cohen says that he's the creator, and he said that they're beholden to Family Guy, because Family Guy was canceled and the reruns were playing at 2 a.m. on Adult Swim, mm-hmm. and they started getting these huge ratings, and so the show was actually brought back for broadcast, and that gave them some hope. And when Family Guy went direct to DVD and then went back to episodes, they were like, well, you know, maybe we could do something like that.
I don't like to think that I'm beholden to Family Guy for anything, but that's fine. I'll grant them this one.
Mm-hmm. Also on television tonight, Police Women of Memphis on TLC, in which Audrey chases down a group of fleeing teens, and Joy detains a man with a child support warrant.
It doesn't really sound like that could be an entire program unless it's all done in super slow-mo. You know, like, but Debbie, chasing a group of fleeing teens seems like that resolves itself pretty quickly. All right.
One of the Showtime networks is showing Green Room with Paul Provenza, whose guests include Andy Dick, Dana Gould, and Andy Kindler.
I don't understand what Andy Dick, what is he doing now other than being on this show?
I think that's it. He just shows up places and is Andy Dick.
Is that the thing? He's officially become the guy?
Yeah.
When did he become the guy who just is himself, no matter who he is or what he's doing?
He's the J.M. Bullock of
yes.
Of 2010.
But I mean, on news radio, he was actually acting, right?
Yeah.
And then, was that the last actual...
I have a feeling Andy Dick is one of those people that no one really wants to work with.
And yet people continue to sort of have him on. Like, he's popping up on this. He's on the Stern Show, like, every other day, I think. It's sort of odd to me that...
He's gotten into that sort of Charles Nelson Reilly sort of area of just being a famous guy who people bring to say wacky things.
And I'm with you on that, except that Charles Nelson Reilly, he was sort of odd, but he didn't give anybody the willies, literally and figuratively, by the way.
Okay, so he's more like Rip Taylor.
Maybe. I mean, you see that? Because Andy Dick, like, let me just tell you this right now. We have a window here to our left. Now, keep in mind, this window is usually obscured from view because I detest the sunlight and the outdoors and everything about nature and God's existence. So I have these black curtains that cover the window with sort of negligible degrees of effectiveness, depending on what time of day it is. But presuming that the curtains were open right now, and if suddenly you realized, Don Taylor, out of your peripheral vision, that someone was looking in the window, and it was either... this mystery man from the previous story who was had amnesia and has blank, staring, vacant eyes and a scraggly beard, Charles Nelson Reilly, Liam Gallagher, or Andy Dick, or just actually a guy like holding a gun. I'm guessing
If you throw like a circus clown in there, this is just my worst nightmare.
If you woke up and Andy Dick was staring in your bedroom window, I mean, you would just, you'd evacuate yourself and then you'd die.
That's true. If I woke up in Charles Nelson Reilly, first of all, he's dead. But if he was alive and he was staring in my bedroom window, at first, yes, I would be frightened. But then when I realized who it was, I would be delighted.
And then there'd be a little laugh track that would happen as you go, why, look, it's Charles Nelson Reilly. And then he would come in and then Charo would appear at some point.
Yeah.
But if Andy Dick was looking in your window, that's like...
Yeah, you'd just be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It would be frightening.
So I'm just saying that nobody really... appears to like him, and everybody appears to be made uncomfortable by him. I get the feeling, as a society, if we could vote to just have him shot into the sun, we would. And yet, at the same time, he continues to be on television, like, relentlessly. It makes no sense.
I also wanted to share really quickly, also new tonight on television, an episode of Mall Cops, Mall of America, on TLC. It's the episode No Pants Day, in which a large group of streakers show up at the Mall of America, hoping to run through with no pants, but Doug Reynolds, director of security, is ready for them. That's Mall Cops, Mall of America on TLC.
All right, then. There you go. Coming up at 1 o'clock, which is just a few minutes from now, the Rick Emerson Show will begin. Today we'll have our True Blood recap. I know the show aired on Sunday, but I'm just now getting caught up. And the fact that I've watched it finally is what matters. So our True Blood... And by the way, I don't want to give anything away, but as much as you had prepared me for this last episode of True Blood, which was episode 2 of season 3... it aired on Sunday, but of course, you know, the show launched on Monday, so we were just very busy. I had no time to watch it. As prepared as I was, there was no amount of preparation that would have been sufficient for what I was exposed to. I mean, it was unreal. So our True Blood recap coming up today: Religious Nutcase Watch, Jackson Watch, Pop Culture Authority, Cap'n Crunch Edition. We will find out how that Cap'n Crunch breakfast cereal contributed to the rise of Apple Computer. And we will ask the magic and tantalizing question, what happens if you tase a watermelon? With any luck, we might find out, because it's a nice day and we've got all this asphalt out front. The Rick Emerson Show begins at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Don't forget, you can hear Legion of News every weekday from noon until 1 right here at pdx.fm. You can listen on your mobile device as well, mobile.pdx.fm. My name is Rick Emerson. We thank you for listening. This has been another installment of
Legion of News on pdx.fm.